Well, I'm really glad to follow the advocacy presentation. This is sort of a mix of sort of research and advocacy. We're addressing language access. I feel very glad to be part of a wonderful team. The project that I'll be presenting on is a collaboration between an advocacy group in New York, the Family Planning Advocates of New York State, the Alliance for Community Research and Development at UC Merced, and then the University of Albany Center for Women, Government, and Civil Society. And I just came back from New York, where we started summarizing most of the lessons from this project. So I'm going to just cover some of what we've learned and some of the policy implications. No disclosures. The context, language access is a bit of an invisible situation in the United States, but as of the 2010 census, we know that 9% of the population is what's called limited English proficiency, or LEP. That means you're unable to communicate or understand English well enough, and that represents 25 million people. The growth rate in the last 10 years between the two censuses, 1990 and 2010, is really remarkable. Most people have been shocked, with the assumption being that somehow more people would be in the United States that speak English. So to see an 80% growth rate between the two censuses is really just telling us where we're headed, not just in the United States, but also in terms of globalization. The ethical need in quality care, equitable care, is really where most people are focusing on, of why we should be providing language access services in all contexts, not just family planning. There's substantial literature that shows that they're safer medical care. Of course, when you're able to speak someone's language, you're not providing what's called veterinary care. Satisfaction of patients and providers has been well shown when people speak your language or have an interpreter, and quite a few variations, but the statistically significant effects in all types of clinical outcomes when people are receiving language access in family planning and overall health care. There are, however, legislative mandates. If you're familiar with Constitutional Amendment number 14, we have a federal law that requires you to provide free 24/7, 365 days a year language access if you're receiving a dollar of federal funds in some way or form. And that's often forgotten. There's also increasingly state and professional mandates. So we've had these in the books for some time. So some of what I'm going to show you may seem surprising, but there are a growing number of lawsuits, and that's how many things happen in this country, is people sue when you're violating the Constitution. And increasingly, Office of Civil Rights audits in terms of healthcare and other agencies who may not be fully understanding the opportunities to provide language access. Common solutions are usually interpreters, and I'm not sure if there's people in the room who have ever served as an interpreter for someone else, maybe in a foreign language, sometimes in a professional context, especially as researchers. Sometimes you end up interpreting research to the lay community. But interpreting is pretty tough to do. Most of the common solutions out there are usually untrained family members and children, friends and neighbors. Usually if you go to a family planning center, you're going to identify bilingual staff who are pulled from their job to interpret for you. And not as many, but there are bilingual providers, nurses, physicians, medical providers who actually speak people's language and are able to communicate both their clinical work and with the people that they're seeing. More importantly, in a growing industry, several $1 billion a year are the professional interpreters. Some people call it language line or telephone interpreting. There's also web interpreting. But these are people who are professionally trained in the clinical terminology, cultural concepts, to actually serve as an interpreter. And of course, there are tons and tons of print and web translated documents and tools, which are not very well evaluated in quality. Common challenges, and this is just to set the context before you look at some of the results, and this is where there's often a lot of misconceptions. There really are no formal policies for language access and interpreting besides what the Constitution and federal mandates provide. Most organizations don't have their own policies. There's really no assessment of someone who's interpreting for you, so when you are encountering interpreting or language access in a clinical setting, you'd wonder if the person who's interpreting for you knows the language well enough, English and the target language, whether they know the culture well enough. So, and oftentimes the misconceptions are that if you speak another language, it must be natural for you to just interpret. It just becomes, it's like magic. You can just do it very well. In clinical settings, especially when you're coming from an underrepresented community, oftentimes people assume that family are the best interpreters because they serve the dual role of interpreter but also advocate. And generally speaking, if someone's working in a clinical setting, the assumption is that bilingual staff want to interpret. They want to help out, even if they're just the janitor at the family planning center. They want to interpret for someone who's coming in for clinical care. We've known for quite some time there's a lot of errors. This is a very, very old study. There's newer ones that are finding, unfortunately, consistency in the results that 23 to 53% of words are incorrectly interpreted. Now, the context in family planning, it becomes much more difficult because of the topic. It's not just healthcare in general, but you're usually talking about something where it's a bit more urgent in terms of what you're trying to do in terms of a woman's rights. And these are just common conditions that have been reported through our project. Some of you may have experienced them, and depending where you work. An adolescent non-English-speaking Somali girl comes in due to rape. Her English-speaking uncle is the interpreter. His son was the rapist. The non-English-speaking Russian mother is visiting for cervical exam following a STI diagnosis with her young teenage son to serve as an interpreter. A young Catholic Spanish-speaking English couple is visiting for family planning consultation to prevent pregnancy, and the bilingual staff who's interpreting is someone who happens to live in their neighborhood. These are far too common situations. These aren't, unfortunately, rare. And when I'm at some of these conferences where the family planning centers we've been working with come together and women stand up to share these stories, it really puts the research into context. So we had the opportunity to get a wonderful study from the Office of Family Planning. 3 very short years. Our goal is to try to just understand and improve family planning through language access. This is the first study of its kind. There's been very little research out there in terms of language access and family planning. I know when we were applying for this grant, it took 2 a revision to get it in, and many of the reviewers were just dumbfounded that language access was a problem in family planning. So thank goodness for the Office of Family Planning program officers who were able to push this through and allow us the opportunity to do this very brief study. We did a 1-year survey of family planning centers in New York State. With a response rate of 30%. There were a little over 200 centers that we surveyed. And centers represent multiple sites. These are just unique. These are usually centers, administrative centers, so that's how we count the number. And then study 2, we selected 6 of the ones that were part of study 1 for a more intense 1-year intervention to look at how they actually select what to do and how to do it in terms of language access. What we're hoping to do with our results right now is to provide some context of what does it look like, what do people do in the real world, and then hopefully provide some models of what you could do. Our guiding questions, we're looking at quantity and quality of language assistance services, we're looking at organizational and community factors that influence the provision of those services, and then we're looking at how do we actually improve participation of family planning centers in disparities research. We really wanted to focus this really more of a community-based participatory approach. This is sort of a rough representation of where the different centers came from. Pretty well represented in terms of rural and urban, in terms of in New York State. We have a lot of results. I'm just going to give you a very quick snapshot. In terms of staff, 64% of the centers have some kind of bilingual staff, on average 9 per center. Only a third of them evaluate their staff's ability to actually speak the language. So they might speak English fairly well, but only a third of them actually had any evidence that the people who are interpreting actually speak the actual target language. About half of them do keep that in mind when they're recruiting new staff. They're looking for bilingual people who live in their community, which is fantastic. And 14% offered some kind of incentive, whether it's 10 cents an hour or a dollar a day, very, very small, to people who are actually serving as interpreters in dual roles. How they provide language access, this is no surprise. Most people rely on the phone because that's the best access they have to professional interpreters. 60% bilingual staff, about half providers that are bilingual, and then 20% actually have full-time professionals in their organization. That's very hard to do. You have to have a larger budget to actually afford interpreters in-house. 90% use some kind of translated materials. Again, the quality of those is not assessed. They have signs and pictograms to kind of show you where are you, where do you go, what you can experience, and then some actually use multilingual videos. There are more and more resources on the web, though, for sure, since we started the study. Infrastructure is something we were really interested in. It's because if you don't have actually policies in place, it's hard to implement any of the things that are required by law. So only 70-some percent had written policies for language access. A similar amount actually had procedures. So it's very difficult without procedures for what to do and how to call an interpreter, or how to determine what language someone speaks to actually do it correctly. So only 70% actually had written procedures for their staff. About half of them had specific goals in their strategic plans to actually do something to address language access. And unfortunately, only 11% actually had some kind of measurable indicator or objective to track language access services. That made it very difficult for us to look at our outcomes in terms of, does language access improve or reduce disparities? Because most of the data was very hard to get from organizations in terms of who's providing language access and tying it to actual patient outcomes. Funding. Funding for language access is an unfunded mandate, some people say. So if you receive federal funds, it's assumed, just like anything else, that you will comply with the law. So if you're receiving federal funds, you need to provide a wheelchair ramp, right? So the same thing applies here. There is no federal funding, technically, for language services. There's some ways to sneak it in. So you have to do it because it's the law. So about six only had some specific funding from either federal agencies or state agencies, philanthropies, and some individual donors. Challenges and opportunities. This mainly came from our six studies that we spent a year with, really trying to see what they do on a monthly basis and how do they address these. And these are probably out of the 12-some factors that came out of the study, three that were the ones that were very consistent, both with our survey results but also with the six case studies. Community context, organizations often struggle to look at the demographic data, readily available public data about what does my community need and how do I serve that need. So if people that are having language barriers aren't coming into the family planning center, some of the clinics we work with just said, well, we don't have a problem. We don't need language access because no one's coming in. But when you look at the demographics, you realize they're actually surrounded by people who have language access problems. They're just not coming in. So that's an opportunity, but also a challenge that we saw. Data collection in terms of where JCO and other organizations are going, the Joint Commission and others, really there's some very, very basic things that you're required to collect. One is, what language does your patient speak? What service you're providing to them? And then usually how you provided it. So some consistency and continuity of care. Very difficult. Our six sites were using electronic medical records. We're just starting to. Some have been using it for at least 2 years. But it was very difficult for organizations to just track that. When someone comes in, what language do they speak? And how are we helping them in some way? Without that, it makes it difficult to actually use your data to solve business problems like staffing and how to actually serve your community. So one way that we found that was important for organizations to address is to look at it as a business problem, since most of the CEOs and others are trying to address this problem from a business problem and cost of cares. What data do I have to collect to actually address this problem? And last but not least was leadership. From our survey study, we found organizations that had midline management and staff who were saying, hey, can we be part of your larger study, your case studies? But if they weren't able to convince their CEOs or CMOs or CFOs to participate, it was very hard for lower level staff to get this accepted as part of what their clinics were doing. So unless there is that upper level leadership administrative need to move the organization to address this challenge, usually it goes unaddressed. So some common things, again, within these three variables that came up very, very more often in terms of the context, is having a community that's out there that needs your services, but they're struggling to come in. What might be causing this? How can your organization address this? Usually the cause was, believe it or not, organizations who just didn't have people in the organization who spoke those languages. It was incredible to see organizations who, just by hiring one or two staff that spoke the language, even though they used telephone interpreters to provide language access, by having those staff in-house, the word somehow gets out that this is a friendly place to come. So simple things can make a big difference, especially word of mouth in terms of who's in your organization. In terms of data, we really again found that the importance was to try to figure out what data to collect in family planning centers that actually address the business problem. And usually the business problem was around, what does it cost for us to provide bilingual staff who are being taken away from their job to interpret? And how do we reduce those costs? So looking at what data is important to solve those kinds of business problems is really what's going to move this issue forward. And last but not least, in terms of leadership, that's a common scenario. If my administrator doesn't buy into the importance of language access, what's causing this? How can your organization address this? Most of the organizations, both in the survey and the case study we did, what they said, well, the reason my administrator is not buying into this is because they think it's expensive. So the follow-up, both for the survey and the case studies, usually was, well, how do you know it's expensive? Well, we don't know. We don't have the data to show. So it's a very kind of a strange chicken or egg situation when leadership says we don't buy into the problem, but when you probe further, there's no data to back up that it's costing something or not. So there's quite a bit of work left to do in terms of research and supporting folks to see the problem of language access and how to address it from a cost perspective. Just want to leave you with a quote. People who speak different languages live in different worlds, not the same world with different labels. Thank you. Questions? Sure.
It seems like there may be some kind of intersection with gender of the translator or interpreter too. Is that something you guys look
at? In most of the situations, the bilingual staff or interpreter are women. So that tends to be, makes it a little easier, at least in family planning. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. For the survey results that we had, there were probably somewhere around 15% of the organizations that reported that as a challenge that they're dealing with. For the 6 sites that we actually work with for the case studies, they all had formal rules where they disallowed that. They usually made it a policy internally not to allow that, and to not allow the male relative to be in the same room. So, but the 6 studies that were selected for the case studies were fairly advanced. These are folks who are had experience in doing this, but that was their way of approaching it. Thank you.